Recording.
Add them to the bottom?
Yeah, you add them to the bottom.
I'll be darned.
This is
independent of that.
This is independent of that, and this will only fit on this one, this will only fit on this one. And we're actually recording right now. This is iPod Nano. This one stores 8 gigabytes, and this was 80.
80?
Wow.
80 gigabytes.
That's fantastic.
And,
I have the regular iPod, but.
Yeah.
I don't even have an iPod.
My wife got me one for Christmas, and I'm.
Nice.
I'm trying to figure out how to use it on my car. Plug in?
Yeah, yeah.
You broadcast to your radio.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah.
That's great.
So, actually, I've only had these about a week, and.
Have a seat, Danielle.
I'm gonna go get you some water.
Oh, I've got coffee, that's all I need.
You're good with coffee? And we'll do this till about 5:15, so it'll give us 15 minutes before we leave for the space center.
I'm glad you brought your jacket, because I prepared to speak with Mr. Stafford, and I had a whole huge printout of questions I was gonna ask him about him and the Apollo Soyuz, but it's genuinely an honor and a privilege to speak with you, Mr. Shiraw.
I appreciate it.
And I'm sure you'll be pleased to know that this is at the end of the sentence will be the last we talk of the current astronaut headlines in the news.
You're not gonna talk about that dumb broad, I hope.
I've stopped talking about that.
Lust in space?
Yes. What's on your official NASA resume that, or what isn't on your official NASA resume that people might find interesting about you?
My favorite expression is, I left Earth 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
I found no place else to go. Please take care of spaceship Earth.
Very good. Very good.
It's been quoted a couple of places, but it's one of my favorite quotes.
Okay.
I have an environmental company. I use that as my motto for it.
Is your motto?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you a collector of watches?
Not really. I've got about 7 or 8, though. I have a classic one from Bob Hope.
Okay.
I have this gorgeous one from Omega.
Yes, yes.
And I'm trying to get them to get me one of the cheap ones now.
Yeah.
I've been working on them.
Okay.
And I have a Breitling that they gave me at the National Aviation Hall of Fame on the 100th anniversary of aviation. All the honorees were brought in, and each one got a watch from Breitling. So Omega doesn't appreciate that, I know, but talking about a Breitling watch.
I don't know anything about a Breitling watch.
Well, we had more fun when we came back to the Smithsonian. Everybody was all shook up, and they finally found out that John Glenn flew a Heuer.
Yes.
A stopwatch.
Yeah, a stopwatch.
And Scott flew a Breitling, and I flew the first Omega.
Right, right.
And then Gordon Cooper flew an Omega after, then they made it official for Gemini.
Yeah.
But we actually bought our own Omegas.
Well, Gordon Cooper also flew with Accutron, if I remember.
Yeah, he had a second watch. Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Do you mind if I join in?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. Okay, so you have some watches. And matter of fact, my next question was going through the John Glenn and the Heuer.
Well, I have other watches, but those are the ones that Bob Hope gave me. There's a great story about Bob Hope. We came back from Apollo 7 and gave a talk in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And the talk was broadcast worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And Barbara Eden presented us memberships in the Screen Actors Guild, which saved my butt, I might say. But Bob said, I'd like to give you guys a present. Can I give you a car? And NASA said, no way, we're all on active duty with NASA. He said, can I give them a watch? I'll give you a watch. Fine, that's all right. So then, about 2 months later, like the Bob Hope Classic had just happened,
mm-hmm.
in the desert, I was there, and I was a guest of Bob, and he came and said, come on by for dinner, and I'd like to give you something tonight. So my wife said, he's not coming home tonight, though. So I went by, it was on television, and Bob was all nervous and trying to get the safe open, couldn't get this, I found out later, the watch out. So he said, I got something, and I called everybody, I can't get the watch out. So just some other time. We didn't say watch, he said, I can't get it out. So about a month later, Walt Cunningham went to a special event, and Bob Hope presented him his watch.
Mm-hmm.
He said, thanks, Walt. Oh, thanks to the memories of Walt Bob Hope.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful Bechtel and Constantine, a gorgeous watch. And then I went to a dinner in Houston about a week later, knowing now what was coming, this watch. I'm sitting at the head table next to Denton Cooley, the heart surgeon,
mm-hmm.
and Gabreski, the ace. It's a big long head table, about 1,000 people, all black tie. And Bob Hope comes in. You see this package being passed down the table to me. I'd look at the package about like that, and I said to Dr. Cooley, I said, Doctor, can you take what's in there and put this watch in there and take that? Of course. I'm going to take the watch in and I'll put it on, whatever. So he gets it all wrapped up. Now I have the Omega, they have the Vacheron. And so Bob Oakland sees this package and he said, "You haven't even opened the package yet." "Well, Bob, frankly, I didn't have the time." He goes, "Ah!" He never forgave me. Gotta get those names straight, but yeah. I had the watch he gave me on, and the other one was in the package.
Right, right.
Didn't cool you underneath the table. So watches are a fun story.
Yeah. Since you were the first person to wear a Speedmaster into space, do you know how Omega was brought into NASA? Did you bring them together, or was it someone else?
Well, they saw it. Deke Slayton and I were both working on the mission, and Deke was replaced, and Scott Carpenter took that mission.
Right, right.
I took the next mission. So Deke had an Omega, and I had an Omega. We bought them.
Mm-hmm.
And NASA had nothing to do with it. We just bought them and checked them, and then we took them to the Cape, and Pan American Airlines was the custodian of all the technical stuff at the Cape.
Mm-hmm.
They took the watches and made them super accurate.
Yeah.
In all six different positions. And I'd go into mission control and say, "Your clock is off about 2 seconds." And, what? And they before the atomic clocks were around.
Yeah.
And so we had a lot of fun with it. Well, after that, I flew it, and then Cooper flew it. They said, we might as well make this regulation.
Yeah.
That's how it came out.
Great. Great. So when did this first happen when you and Deke bought your watches?
In Houston.
Was it about 61 and earlier or later?
No, it had to be, the mission was probably early 62.
Early 62?
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to ask
just
you.
Just off the shelf, I might add. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if you still own the Omega Speedmasters, but I see you're wearing your gold one, which is.
Well, the Speedmaster's in a museum in Houston. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Well, actually, I have a picture in here of your watch in a museum in Bien too.
Where?
In Bien.
In Switzerland.
In Bien.
In Bien, yes. Right here.
Maybe they moved it to Houston.
Right there on the left. That's supposedly your watch
there.
That
looks like it. Well, I wonder what's the one in Houston.
We'll have to find out.
Because I only had one.
That's the other thing. Well,
it's
actually,
maybe it's on loan.
Yeah.
You see, this is what us collectors do in our spare time.
Yeah.
Is we get together and we share and compare notes. We obtain this from Marco Rishon, and here's a thing where you were given one in 70.
Another watch.
It's at least that's what the paperwork says.
No, I don't recall that.
Yeah. Maybe you donated it to the museum.
I might have, because
or the GSA may have pulled it back from you at some point.
Yeah. Well, they couldn't have, because it wasn't the government watch, the one I had, the original one.
Well, yeah, that's true.
That's true.
Yeah.
In 70, because I was long gone by then.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it says either 0904 or 0409, and of course the Europeans have the calendar difference in ours.
It still says 1970, though.
Right, so this is after your missions.
I was gone.
Yeah.
Huh.
So you've already answered how the astronauts came to be issued watches by Omega. We're pounding these out.
Yeah.
How much attention did astronauts pay in the selection of chronographs? I mean, you said that you and Deke decided, hey, we ought to standardize on this. And
well, that was later, yeah.
That was later, but
yeah.
And we know that the testing has been done on what was done on five different types of chronographs, just to make sure.
Just to pass the bill, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But did the average astronaut and the astronaut corps pay any attention to that? They probably had
things. Many more things to do.
Yeah. Okay. Did they have any? Did anyone other than you and Deke have input into the selection?
Well, Gus did too, because he was one of us. And Shepard and Grissom didn't fly with watches.
Right.
That's the other interesting part.
Yeah.
So the first one up actually was Glenn with that Heuer.
With that Heuer
stopwatch.
Stopwatch. Yeah.
That's in the museum in San Diego, by the
right,
way.
Right. And the clock is ticking. Actually, the person who wrote that article in International Watch is how I got associated with International Watch and why I'm interviewing you.
Oh,
yes, Jeff Stein was the person who wrote that article.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to edit this out of the recording because he did under a pseudonym. Because he didn't get a chance to edit it.
Oh, that's fun.
Because someone at IW did the editing, so he's like, I'll just put it under a pseudonym because he didn't have time to do the proofreading, himself. So, was there any special training on how to use the chronograph?
No, we worked with it so much.
That
there were all kinds of pictures of us playing with it, but the real key was pre-setting it to T plus 20 seconds. You knew that.
I didn't know that. Could you elaborate on that?
When we got in the spacecraft, before we got ready to tie up everything, we advanced the stopwatch to 20 seconds, or just much as I'm doing here, stopped it there.
Mm-hmm.
And then after liftoff, I say, stand by, mark, and you start the watch again.
Ah.
Because you were too busy with your hands on switches to start the watch then, but T plus 20 seconds is all quiet, nothing's going on. Started.
You're all set and being pushed down by the thrust of the rocket.
Now Shepard said liftoff clock has started, but that was the clock on the instrument pad.
Right, right.
And in my case, it was liftoff and then three. Now I forget how the count went. Is it so it's all written out?
But right, right.
At T plus 20 seconds, I started the stopwatch.
Okay. What other timers were there on board? Were there panel mounts, stopwatches?
Panel mount, yeah, panel mount that could be updated from the ground,
mm-hmm.
and it had elapsed time. In fact, I went back to the Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville. But now my spacecraft, Jet Mercury, is in Florida, the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
But in Huntsville, Ed Buckley, who will be here,
yes,
had the hatch off so I could look at it and start winding the clock. Start running.
Start right up.
It still works.
Yeah.
That's funny.
That's great.
Well, Cooper had trouble with his and used his Omega stopwatch to count down the retrofire.
Right. I remember reading that. Yeah. Were there any other stopwatches?
That was it.
Yeah. Okay.
Probably why Cooper took a second because he was up for over 24 hours.
Right. He was up for about 31, 30,
yeah, I think
32.
So.
Yeah. Were there any specific tasks or events that went to a specific timing device? Did you like time burn, say, for example, with your stopwatch?
Well, everything is on time, yeah.
Right.
All Earth orbit missions are on time, I mean, intervals of time.
Right.
Of course, you don't worry about local time.
Right. You said
particularly on Apollo, we're up there for 11 days. Oh. The heck with you guys. We're not going to get up at Houston time. We've got to set our own time zone.
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah.
I guess what I was saying, did you rely as much or more on instructions from ground control as to when to start burns and stop burns, or did you watch the timers or the?
Well, you had both, and if you didn't have communications, you had to.
You're right,
the
exactly.
Timer all set.
Yeah.
A Shepard counted me down for Mercury.
Right.
And I said, that's a pretty good count, Shepard, because later it was
yeah.
planned, right? I said the carrier was out of position by 3 miles. But we're going 5 miles a second, so.
Oh, yeah.
A second can really set you off a long distance.
Pinpoint landing.
Pretty good.
Steely-eyed pilot there. Was there a different feel to the earlier missions than your later mission?
Oh, I'm sure that's true. Mm-hmm. The Gemini liftoff, for example, had a false liftoff.
Right.
And I knew it
because
I had a liftoff on my Atlas, Mercury Atlas. And I said that was not a liftoff. I just said, you reject normally.
Right.
The mission rule went to reject. No, we haven't lifted off. So I said, okay.
And you stayed with the rocket
when you
probably shouldn't have.
By the mission rules, it shouldn't have, but
yeah.
I knew better.
You showed patience like you did down in the lobby earlier today.
Exactly. Yes. Those women were carrying on long conversations with these people. I don't think they're talking about.
They sure were. The concierge came by and asked me if he had helped me with the photocopies, and I said, "Gentleman behind this pillar here, I'm 90% positive is Mr. Chirac. Are you?"
Did he?
Do you feel quartz watches are suitable for EBA or space use?
They work very well. There's no problem with that.
I've read somewhere that supposedly in space, battery power watches drain twice as fast as they do on Earth. I
can't imagine why. It's cold.
I was doing research on Fortis watches for an article,
yeah.
and that's one of the things apparently the Russians discovered when they were working on
battery-powered watches.
That quartz watches or battery-powered watches
you
drain the battery twice as fast.
I have no data on that.
Okay. What other watches would you consider for the role that the Speedmaster has been used in?
You mean in the future?
In the future. You know, are there other Omega products or, you know, that you would think?
It's only Omega products.
Oh, well, yeah, sure.
All of them, yeah.
All of them.
No, I don't think there's any preference. I found that was the one I needed, and it worked perfectly.
Right.
So I used it with I know how the other watches showed up. I had an issue watch in Gemini.
Mm-hmm.
An issue watch in Apollo.
Right.
So those watches went back into the system again.
Right.
So there were technically three watches.
Right.
Okay, that just...
That's probably why. And one of the questions I wanted to ask, and like I say, I had this all typed out and so on and so forth, and I had to redo it because of the change of venue.
Doing the same thing, yeah.
One of the questions that I had earlier on was, you know, did an astronaut came into the program, say in Gemini or Apollo, and how did he come to be issued a watch? And what was his experience with it? Did he have to turn it in?
Oh, I've got a great story about that. In fact, the seven of us reported in at Langley Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. We're in this room about the size of this area right here. Seven steel desks, we call them LSTs, large steel desks.
Mm-hmm.
And this one engineer, his name is in some data, I can find it for you, but he came in wearing a 24-hour watch.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we're all going to work in 24 hours now, so here's a watch, you all wear this 24-hour watch. So we put it on, turn all the watches off. I forget what we even had.
Mm-hmm.
We were about a week, we were going crazy trying to read 24-hour watches. We all were military, we could think 24,
right.
We couldn't read 24.
Mm-hmm.
So about a week later, he came in, and Harold was his name. I said, Harold, what time is it? He said, oh, it's about 12:30. We took the watches off, said, there you go.
That was the end of that.
That's obvious, switch arms. Harold Johnson, I think it was, yeah.
Harold Johnson, okay. In the final preparations for a mission or a liftoff, was there a procedure for prepping the speedies other than, as you mentioned, advancing at 20 seconds? Did someone wind the watches, or did you like turn them in a week or two beforehand so that they could make sure they're running accurately?
We kept running them, of course. No, we wore them.
You just wore them?
They may have done that later. I'm not sure. That's a good point. Probably the Pan Am may have still had custody of it until a few hours before.
Okay.
We want to be sure we wound it up to it, so it was sure we wound.
Right, and it was usually set to Houston or mission time?
That's a good question. It was probably set to Cape time.
Do you think it was set to Cape time?
Yeah,
not Houston?
Because we were living with that.
Okay.
That's a good question.
Well,
yeah.
This was happening about 3 hours ago upstairs.
Yeah. If you think about that, we probably changed it to another time zone when we were in that orbit.
Okay.
Because we didn't want to get up at Houston time, we were going to go up at Washington time, or
wanted to switch it back an hour so you get an extra hour of sleep.
Yeah. What we actually did was try to, when the mission had a particularly important event like rendezvous,
mm-hmm.
you'd wake up 3 hours before that, so
right.
you're ready for it, rather than stay up for 12 hours and do rendezvous. So we made that, like that would be like 10 o'clock in the morning, go back to 3 hours, be 7 o'clock, wherever
mm-hmm.
that was. We made 7 o'clock, wherever that was, our local time,
mm-hmm.
on board.
Great. Were astronauts required to turn over their speedmasters for service or maintenance at any time or in any interval?
I don't recall that. No.
Okay. Well, then I guess it wouldn't have caused any anguish for astronauts to have had to do that if they didn't.
No.
In general, how did astronauts, in your opinion, view the chronographs? Did they like them? Did they not like them? I've seen some things about what Buzz has said about them.
Buzz will go to the opening of an envelope. He'll go anywhere for money and for public.
This might be this question answer might be edited. But.
No, he knows I've said that.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it was Gordon Cooper's. I think it was Gordon Cooper's widow. It was Gordon Cooper's second wife, Susan,
mm-hmm.
that said Buzz will go to the opening of an envelope. We all adopted that right away. I say Neil Armstrong will lick the envelope shut.
Wow.
No, Buzz has made a PR monster out of himself. He really has.
Yeah. Did most astronauts just see it as another part of their kit, or
it was just part of the program?
Part of the program. They didn't see it as being emblematic of.
Oh, by no means. No.
It was just another another tool to get the job done.
Exactly.
And treated as such.
Yeah.
Okay. Which space missions did you consider the most hazardous?
Hazardous?
Yeah.
All three.
All three.
Actually, oddly enough, the Atlas was the most hazardous booster.
Right.
And the four of us flew on Atlas have 100% success.
Yep.
Isn't that amazing when you think of it?
Yeah.
So we saw Atlas blow up a couple times. That got our attention. And look at the Saturn. It had never had a problem. Never.
No.
Amazing when you think of it.
And still, from what I understand, the largest, the loudest sound, aside from a nuclear explosion, made in
the S5, Saturn V. 7.5 million pounds of thrust.
Wow.
That's a big number.
It is. What do you think of NASA's current plans for space exploration?
Pretty well screwed up. I have a couple of arguments that I recorded recently, and one of them is that we don't know how a human can endure the long duration of a trip to Mars and back. Mm-hmm. Well, it was like going to the moon and back, Mars and back, one word. Mm-hmm. Moon and back, Mars and back. Mm-hmm. Well, it could be a 2.5 to 3 year mission. Right. We have not enough room in the vehicle for exercise devices, unless they do something like von Braun proposed in 1969. Imagine that.
Wow.
Actually had a proposal. He was the one that wanted the space station to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
To go to the moon, and if we'd done that, we would not have beat the Soviets there.
Right.
At any rate, to go to Mars and back, one, you have radiation, monster problem.
Right.
Two, you have timing. My God, the time's going to be real critical. Mm-hmm. You can't use satellite watches up there.
Right.
They're all on the way back here somewhere. You need a ton of water to drink a year.
Right.
A year. Now, where's all that water coming from?
Exactly. And you got to lift it out of the gravity well.
Yeah. And I keep saying, well, they've been trying to find water on Mars. I realize 70% of the Earth's surface is water. Mm-hmm. And only 1% of the water on this planet is palatable. 1%? Mm-hmm. Now, if you find water on Mars or Moon, is that going to be palatable if you even find it? Now, you're going to purify it? How are you going to do that? Mm-hmm. All that equipment to do that, you could to carry a ton of water per person.
Mm-hmm.
That's just to drink, not to
right.
wash your face or
right.
brush your teeth,
right.
sponge your body. These are big, big problems.
Yeah.
And they're not addressing it. They're talking about going to the moon and building a moon colony.
Yeah.
Now on the moon, and a lot of the astronauts are talking about that, the dust can be a real nightmare.
Oh yeah.
It's crystalline glass almost. It'll cut up all the bearings and seals. So we worry about that. And then they're talking about, well, you can use it regolith and make some hydrogen 3 out of it and all that. Well, that's very nice. But you're going to be up there for months at a time. You've got to get in and out of the suit. As soon as you get on the moon and then go back and get out of the suit, you've got to be sure all those seals are protected so you can put it back together again.
Mm-hmm.
If they leak, you have a problem. Now, if you're up on the moon for a few months, you aren't going to be lucky the way the 12 guys were, and that there were some solar flares
right.
in between that would have killed the astronauts if they
mm-hmm.
were there. So radiation's a monster problem.
Right.
And they're not addressing radiation, water, duration, physical fitness, let alone taking care of physical problems.
Exactly.
You could have all kinds of physical problems that you just can't take care of immediately. So it's a tough mission.
Yeah.
Von Braun was already doing it in the 80s.
Yeah.
We have about 5 minutes, so.
Yeah, I think I'm going to, well,
he's got a bunch.
We got through
quite a few of them. Do you ever wish you'd flown more missions? Do you ever wish you'd flown a fourth mission?
I was hoping to get a lunar mission, but
yeah.
once I got the first Apollo mission, I knew that was the end of it. That's the kiss of death to command command, not kiss of death in essence, but end of the line if you command an Apollo mission.
Right.
And no one commanded an Apollo mission had a second one except for Stafford,
right.
which was Apollo Soyuz.
Right.
That's only because Slayton couldn't take command. He had to have somebody else to do it. So he ended up conning Tom into going up again on that one, which Tom enjoyed, of course.
He adopted a son.
Tom enjoyed it so much he adopted two little Russian boys as sons.
Yeah.
I just love
it. Amazing.
Yeah.
And of course, we all got to know Valery Kubashov and Alexei Leonov very well.
Yeah. If you could have your choice of a spacecraft, past or present, to fly on a mission, and what mission would you fly? In other words, if you could pick,
Gemini 6 all over again.
Gemini 6 all over again?
Yeah, that was a thrill.
Yeah.
But one that we surpassed the Soviets finally.
Right.
That in itself was a big event. And two, doing the rendezvous. I keep saying, to define a rendezvous, if a man walks across the street, looks across the street at a beautiful girl like Danielle walking out the way and he waves at her, that's not a rendezvous, that's called a passing acquaintance. And if he can walk through the traffic across the street and nibble on her ear, that's a rendezvous.
I do like that, that's very good.
I'd love to make that a little personal for you.
Thank you.
Got a little blush on her, that's
of
pretty
course.
Good.
Do you have any advice for any youngster who might be interested in a career in the space sector?
Oh, I wish they would do that. Of course, we have the Scholarship Foundation, the National Scholarship Foundation. I'm active with Give Kids the World, which is a sequel to Make a Wish, this kind of thing. We're trying to get the kids excited about math, engineering, and science. My greatest shock was recently to read, it was an Aviation Week, but something like 600,000 students in China in engineering, 300,000 or 400,000 in India, 70,000 in the United States for engineering. So we've really got to get them stimulated. But not with the dead end street like the Mars mission. We've got to do something that makes it exciting again.
What would that be?
I'm not sure. That's why that wasn't my job. They got me excited because they said I could go higher, farther, and faster. Right. So that did it. I can't get over this. That's pretty clever.
I had a friend who dabbles in podcasts, and I went over to his place. And he had microphones the whole nine yards. We tried these out, and these worked as good as anything he had.
The fidelity is as good as the other stuff.
It's good. It's good enough to be listened.
I play music with Bose headsets and all.
Well, I plan on. I didn't bring my laptop with me. It's up in the hotel room, but I plan on bringing this into the laptop, bringing it onto CDs. I'll be sending copies to Danielle, and you'll get a copy too.
Oh, please. Yeah.
That way, you won't be misquoted by.
Glad I've had a rendezvous with Danielle.
Let's start that rumor.
I asked that one.
Well, you know I'm a smart astronaut. most everybody knows that.
John Glenn's been back up into space. If NASA called you Monday morning and said, want you to go, would you?
My favorite quote, one, I'm not that old.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I didn't need the flight time. I had 300 hours. John had less than five.
Mm-hmm.
I, too, would do anything to get out of that damn U.S. Senate, which is even more applicable today.
Yeah.
I mean, as of today.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I wouldn't. I didn't want to go into politics, never did want to.
But, no, I mean, would you go into space again?
No, I wouldn't, because it would take 3 years to get to the point where I was able to command a shuttle mission.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be a strap hanger. Okay. That's what I call John, who's in the back, as a strap hanger. And test pilots and fighter pilots are very proud of their heritage, and they don't like to be degraded, I guess is the whole point, to a different level. John went because he was excited and had a big chance.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure, but having had three flights, I didn't need to go that way.
Okay.
As a strap hanger.
Right.
But I don't blame John for going. It was a heck of a good idea.
Okay.
Want to do one more?
I was going to ask you about books or films you might recommend for interested reading, and I was going to ask you if there were any suggestions you would have for an astronaut timepiece.
I just got a neat book, a British fellow did, Ascent, A-S-C-E-N-T.
Ascent? Or Assets?
Ascent.
Yeah.
And it's about the Russians instead of the Americans.
Okay.
And I just read the first part of it, and he throws in how the American did this, like Wally Schrod did this, John Glenn did this,
mm-hmm.
and the Russians are jealous of that. They were in combat in Korea, as I was.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about, gee, Wally Schrod got one of us today. Not that way, but it was kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's an interesting book, but no, it'll go into the space program, which I have not reached yet, as far as reading the book goes. It's just released.
Okay. Look for it on Amazon.
Yeah.
The name was something like De Niro or something like that. I'm not sure.
Okay. And like I say,
it's the real space cowboys that Ed Buckley did. I've got to recommend that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if you were to come out with a new astronaut timepiece, would there be anything you'd suggest, like maybe better water resistance, maybe titanium?
Oh, lots of things.
Lots of things.
Sure. Updating.
Yeah. Automatic movement, maybe.
Well, that's the other part. Although. You have to keep moving to make the automatic movement work. And I think that may be the way to do it rather than winding it. Electrical is, as you say, might very well be hurt by the environment.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing about time is not an easy one to work with.
Right.
I always talk about Mr. Nixon called the moon when Neil was on the moon.
Right.
Hello, Neil. Hello, Mr. President. Took almost 3 seconds round trip.
Mm-hmm.
Speed of light. Now, to go to the sun takes 8 minutes. You have to go at night. The next nearest star is 4 1/3 years away at the speed
Alpha
of
light. Alpha Centauri.
Now that is so far, yeah, Alpha Beta Centauri. Mm-hmm. That's the nearest star.
Yeah.
And have you ever seen those representations of the size of stars, like Antares and Deacon Ben, or our sun's little tiny diddly dot? That breaks you up. So somehow time has to be worked with.
Right.
Not necessarily the speed of light concept, but going to different places in the solar system, time's going to be a variable you have to work with. So Omega has to do some research there.
Well, thank you very much for your
My
time.
Pleasure.
I hope I haven't asked too many boring questions.
Thank you much for your time. You didn't mean to say that,
did you? Actually, I didn't.
It was a second thought.
But it works out good. Like I say, I hope I haven't asked you too many boring questions.
No, it was fun.
And it was genuinely a pleasure and an honor to meet and speak with you.
My pleasure.
You're the fifth Apollo astronaut that I've had a chance to meet
really?
In person.
Oh.
I met when I was in sixth grade, 11 years old. I met with the crew of either Apollo 15 or 16. I can't quite remember which. They were doing the tour after their mission.
16, Charlie Duke's going to be here.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So I'll get to ask him, do you ever do a thing at in Elgin, Illinois, at Hemmings Auditorium?
Elgin, that's another watch.
Yeah, it is. It is. Right down the street from the clock factory.
Yeah, yeah.
And I met Jim Lovell at a book signing about a dozen years ago.
I also have my original Rolex that the Naval Academy Alumni Association gave me in 65.
Mm-hmm.
I had to have the face redone. It still runs. Amazing.
Good.
That's a self-winder, so they do work.
One of the questions I skipped was, are there any astronaut reunions?
Oh, of course.
Or get-togethers all the time?
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Now let's see here.
That's pretty good.
We're going to stop and save. 31 minutes and 43 seconds. 31 minutes and 53 seconds.